Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of the Gamer Talk podcast. Ole Matiba is my guest today, the man, the myth, the legend. Hey Ole, happy to have you here.
Hey Christoph, nice to be here. Can't wait to have some spicy hot dogs.
Great. I think everyone is waiting on this episode. You haven't been in a podcast for a very long time now, and some stuff happened and some time has passed since the last time you've been on a podcast. So, yeah, give us a short introduction of yourself. I think every weapon artist or hard surface artist has stumbled across your profile on ArtStation and took a look at your state-of-the-art weapon art. Just give us a short introduction of yourself.
Sure thing. I'm Ole Matiba. I in this industry since 2018, so not actually that long. But in that short time, I managed to work on dozens of AAA shooter IPs. I have most notably probably worked on several Call of Duty titles. I have co-founded the outsourced studio War Dog Studios with Jade Law. We took over the hard surface side of the outsourced business in this AAA industry by night, wrecked everything, provided the best of the best art, built an amazing team, and then last December I departed on my own journey outside of Wardog.
Nice. So how did this all went, or how did this all go with Wardog, with you leaving Wardog? So you kind of on your own again, right?
Yes. Well, it's I've worked my very first industry job in at Elite 3D, which was outsourced as well. Mm-hmm. So I went from outsource into outsource, and I think if you work too long in outsource, you kind of get tired of it. And the fact that I kind of achieved everything that I wanted to achieve with outsource, like working for all the top clients, working hand in hand with them, collaborating like you're just expanded arm of their studios, and with countless AAA credits, I think I just kind of got bored. Maybe like I started to lose the grip, started to lose the passion a bit. So I knew I just had to try something new, figure out where to go next. And I know Wardog is in great hands with Jade, and so I decided to leave and figure out what I want to do, where I want to go next, what's awaiting me next, and yeah, that's basically where I'm at right now. But I do have already big plans that I can't tell yet.
All right, yeah, we are pretty pumped to hear what you have planned for the future. So how did you start Wardog? Like you said, you came from outsourcing, working for Elite 3D on several AAA title, and then did you just talk to Jade and say, "Hey, let's start an outsourcing company. There is a need for that in the industry."
Kinda. When I learned 3D, I would go on Twitch, and one night I saw the stream that was a banana in the stream, and turned out it was Jade that I met on Twitch. Uh-huh. And while I would learn 3D, I would hang out on the stream chatting, because she obviously comes from the industry. It was very insightful, very interesting, very nice person. We added each other on Discord. Then I went kind of like on deep dive when I got my first job. We didn't talk at all, and basically after that job I tried to apply at several countless studios, but there was many problems. Like I couldn't work in America because of visas. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a school dropout, there's no chance to get a visa, except you're like director level or principal, etc. But I was literally a junior. At a Europe, no one wanted me. Sedge, and so I was taking on some jobs like freelance and lecturing in a university.
Mm-hmm.
But all of that was really not doing it for me. Like, I wasn't really fulfilled or happy because I had planned big things in this industry. So I talked with Jade more frequently again, and she was at a point in her life where she wanted to start something new. And so we basically were like, there's a famous picture of that somewhere on Twitter, I think, still on the Wardog page, where we are just like, do you want to start an outsource company? And then I think I answered, hell yeah. And then obviously, because I had this big portfolio, we decided, yeah, let's make guns. And yeah, that's how we founded Wardog.
Nice. So how was it in the beginning? Like, you had to build up your portfolio first and then reach out to companies. How did that go?
We built on top of my portfolio,
mm-hmm.
more assets, just like a very strong, very big portfolio. And Linus Scheffel was also a great help when it came to building the portfolio, because he was there in the beginning and he provided some of his previous works to the portfolio, so we could post, like, I think we posted on ArtStation when we launched like 15 weapons or something. So we created this big buzz on ArtStation with Wardog with all those high quality, high end assets.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically never had to fight for any clients or whatever. They all just came to us, and it was just like getting all the work done in time was more the problem than finding work.
This was a crazy time, because at that time lots of like outsourcing companies were popping up, like these little small ones that are not like big companies, that are more like private driven, and they were like popping up like crazy. Everyone was just building assets and throwing them onto their ArtStation portfolio, and then, hey, we can do assets or weapons. But Wardog was always that they did like the extra mile, and they were just like coming with way more authentic stuff and more more high quality. I would say this was like the top notch back in the day.
I think our success recipe was the quality, our communication, which is very important, because a lot of outsource companies have very poor communication and are tough to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We always made sure that it's not a problem with us, and I'm very charismatic when talking to clients. I always make them feel I always make sure that they know that the people that work on this project care for the project and not just providing assets and waiting for their paycheck.
Yeah, because in the end, it's a service, right? You are selling your service, and they want to feel you are taking care of that service.
Yes. Like, so we say in Germany, the guest is the king.
Exactly, yeah. So you're freelancing now, right?
Yes.
So how was it for you to be like a freelancer and working and like creating art, and in comparison to working for Elite 3D and being like in an in-house company?
It's fine. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I enjoy working from home for a while now. Not sure if I always want to do that, but currently, it's the good choice. Also, my girlfriend works at Rockstar. She definitely has a nice job that obviously she doesn't want to quit. So
nice.
I'm also like here in the UK and in Scotland for the long run. So obviously, working somewhere in house would mean it has to be in Scotland, and there's not much
I can
options.
Imagine.
So for now, I stay freelance.
So is your girlfriend also an artist?
No, she works in production.
Oh, cool. So I guess...
But she comes from an animation background.
Ah, I got you. Got you. So I guess she's working on the next GT Grand Theft Auto?
I mean, I think, yes. I think they announced at some point that there's like an ex-Red Dead and pre-production or something, I don't think that she works on that.
Nice. So they're,
but they are also like so tight-lipped about this whole thing that it's impossible to hear anything about this game. So except the leaks that are already outside. That's all the information that anyone can get about this game. It's crazy how tight their security is. But it's also understandable.
So
it's
exciting like, years ahead, right?
For her, definitely, yes.
Yeah.
So, but even me, as someone who doesn't like GTA, I was even excited seeing the trailer. Like,
that's cool.
It felt like... a different kind of GTA game, like right? Like the last one was too normie for me. Like there was not enough of the craziness that GTA is kind of known for. But the new one in the trailer, it looked very much like a let's make America look
mayhem
even more crazy than it already is.
Yeah, maybe because like the world became crazier in the last 10 years.
Yes, maybe.
So, you're also photographing, right?
Yes.
So how you started photographing the last year?
Let me think. It was it last? I think so. I'm just trying to think now when I got the camera. I think it was last year. Yeah, it's like maybe a half a year ago or something.
Okay. So how is it for you? How is it your creative outlet? How do you enjoy it?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. It's very, like it gives you also a lot of like more reason to go travel. Like if you're not only or already want to travel anyway, but having a camera kind of makes you want to go to places that are not so normal to go to, if that makes sense, to get that nice picture, that great canvas. It's like, but that's also because I'm very min-maxing most of the things that I touch. So I really, when I do want to make photos, I want to, you know, when I see the scaffolding, I want to climb that scaffolding to take that picture that no one can take because
maximum.
It's not where you should go. And I really like that aspect of photography.
Like, is there something you could take into your 3D art from photography? Is there something you could take over?
But I think that having the experience in 3D helped tremendously with photography, because when I took my first pictures, literally the first pictures, which was last December, so like 3 months ago, people saw them and they were like, shut up, that's like your first pictures, the first time you have a camera in your hands. And I was like, yep, that's me. And I think that is because doing art direction and doing 3D for a while now just sharpens your skills when it comes to composition
and feeling
and feeling, lighting, what is like a good shot, all this kind of stuff.
Nice. So I saw that you kind of in the process and getting more into creating your own weapons and props. How did that come up? How did that come apart? Have you been tired of seeing AK-47s and M4s on the art station and want to make your own thing?
Yeah, I just want to quit production 3D. Like, I start to, don't want to say hate, I still like enjoy it more than anything else, as in like I wouldn't do another job rather than that, if that makes sense. Like, it's still enjoyable, but it's I don't really like, I min-maxed make weapons for games, so I'm like, okay, I need to up the game again. So now I just want to design the game guns, but I also look into doing more bigger stuff than that, which I can't go too detailed in yet, but I mean, some people have already seen too that on Twitter I work on my own game, and yeah, I just don't see myself doing weapons all day every day for like 10 years. So
so what's the process of creating those weapons on your own, like sketching them or kind of concepting them?
The way I approach it,
just do it.
I just get kind of I usually get like a real gun as a reference point. I recreate the shapes of that real gun first, very roughly, and I just use that to basically create an entirely new gun just by pushing around cubes and cylinders to see what shapes I think are interesting. And the guns don't look like the references I took for them at all, but it helps with making sure that you still stay in the in like the base size and proportions of said real guns. So when you like have a SMG that you start off on as a reference point, you don't start then and making a rifle out of it by accident, or the grip is way too far away from the stock, etc. So but there's really no real professional approach to how I design guns, like how others people like, oh, I sketch this, I sketch that, and then I do like six iterations, and now I just dive deep in and tunnel for 12 hours, and then I come up with a shape that looks super interesting, and then I redefine it.
Okay, so you kind of go just you throw yourself in there and you see where you're coming out of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And is there something you learned along the way of throwing you in this process, and like you will get better over time, I imagine. But are there some takeaways from concepting?
Well, I think when you do guns for a few years, you have seen and modeled so many guns that you understand how they work, how they look, how they feel, all this kind of stuff. Just helps have the visual memory library to feed from when you come up with your own stuff. And also, I hate doing stuff that other people have done, like even if it's just like close, like similar-ish or something. So I try to always figure out how I can push for something entirely new.
Okay. Okay. So you are completely self-taught, right, Ole?
Yes. I mean, there's obviously all my years in the industry, there was countless of people who I learned from. But when it came about like breaking into this industry and stuff like that, yeah, I never went to a university or school or anything like that.
So would you do it again like this, or would you do it differently if you could start again?
I mean, I would absolutely do it like this, but I would probably, if I had the money, get a mentor or something to fasten it up. But other than that, yeah, I would be like, I would again do it self-taught. I would search for a mentor, because they might be pricey, but some of them are really worth the money.
Yeah, I think they are kind of in the sweet spot where they are still affordable, but they still teach you the right things you are really currently needing in this position, right?
Yeah.
How was your time at Elite 3D? I heard you were drinking Red Bull all day and working extra long and really grinding in. I heard some stories. Yeah. Ole. Just give me some hardcore facts now.
When people like it's it's very unhealthy to recommend what I did, but if you want to become one, if not the best in what you do, it's very simple. Like the time you put into learning something equates your skill. like obviously there's like don't work hard, work smart, all this kind of sentences. But if you work, like if you have someone that works hard and smart, you're fucked if you want to keep up with them. So I always have had imposter syndromes big times, even nowadays. And,
still?
Of course.
How is this possible? And
because I keep pushing myself. Mm-hmm. So like now I do concepts, right? So now there's tons of other people that are way better than me. So like whenever I feel too comfortable in what I do, I push for the next thing. Or like founding Wardog, that was probably pushing myself out of the comfort zone the most. But you know, I always try to up my game by doing the craziest stuff. But back to the Red Bull. So the way I kept up with like some of my coworkers, for example, there was Rick Reeves, who was coming in as a intern, and he was so much better than me. And I was a junior artist, so technically I was above him, but he was better than me. And I was like, shit. So I had to get good fast. And I was like, the only way to do that is work my 8 to 9 hours a day at Elite 3D. And when I go home, I work for another 6 to 8 hours and learn 3D on my own. So I usually would work like 14 to 16 hours a day on 3D. Mm-hmm. And that obviously comes back to you because you don't get the sleep that you need. So to maintain that speed, I drank copious amounts of Red Bull. There was days where I drank 6 Red Bulls.
Holy.
In a morning. And there was one time towards the end of the year, I think, where I could feel that I overdone it. Like when I drank the Red Bull, I could feel how my heart literally started to like throttle. It would be like not exactly in a rhythm anymore. And you could feel like how you start sweating and like your heart stops like beating for a second or so, and then it goes again and it stopped again. And I was like, okay.
Calm down, Ole.
I think I need to stop. And that's when I stopped drinking Red Bull altogether. Nowadays, I drink it again here and there, like...
But not six...
Maybe, no, and also maybe like once a month or so. But okay. Yeah, I definitely stopped drinking energy drinks because they also fuck with your sleep at all, completely. Mm-hmm. Because I was unable to sleep normally because of all the caffeine.
Yeah, imagine. Yeah.
But it did work. I came out of Elite 3D after a year and I was good as fuck and my progress was ridiculous, so
yeah, I can imagine
it did work. It might have come to a price. I might live a few years less than other people, I don't know. But I also eat insanely healthy and cook everything myself, so maybe I'll be fine.
Yeah, I imagine, because we have in contact back then and you always showed me some work in progress shots and they kept becoming better every time. And I was like, holy shit, how is he doing this? He's working full-time at Elite 3D. And also he's like grinding all weekend long with new art and new weapons he's creating. I was like, this dude is on another level. Yeah, it was really crazy back then. So, as you are a hard surface artist, what are some main specifics when you take a look at a hard surface asset for you that you want to see?
It's probably, I mean, if it's for a game, obviously, people need to understand, and a lot of weapon artists, I feel like, don't understand this anymore. You still make a fucking asset for a game. Like, it's cool that you can do all your internals, and it's cool that this tiny fucking screw in the front of the barrel that no one will ever see is pinpoint accurate. But the truth is, if you make it for a game, no one gives a shit, and people also are not exactly willing to pay the extra money for that kind of a detail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, we need high quality. Yes, it needs to look very realistic, very believable. but there is a level of accuracy that's just overkill, and a lot of people I see also on ArcStation go that extra mile, and I get it for your portfolio, but it's, if you spend like half the time, it would probably look the same, except that some of the screws, if you zoom very close in, look a bit different. And at that time, you could literally have made two guns instead of one. Like,
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I get some people do it because they enjoy it and it's the passion, but I often see stuff also from like the business side of things. Like, as an artist in this industry, as tough and hard as it can sound, most of us should be business person first, artist second. Sounds harsh, but if you really want to live from what we do, it sometimes is really needed to think that way.
Especially, especially when you're a freelancer, you need to be fast, and you you don't have time.
Well, as a freelancer, as a freelancer, it really depends on your standing as well. Like,
exactly.
I can't take my time, but there's also, I know a lot of people not far into their career, they often get like pushed, yeah, it needs to be done, quicker.
Yeah.
So I also know that when I talk about my experiences with freelance or working with AAA clients, comes from a rather privileged standpoint of being someone with a name that people respect and trust.
Yeah, so like, how's the elitism in weapon art? I think it's the right balance between realistic weapons and to be able to just create game art, right?
For most of my career, I would be scared posting guns on ArtStation because I knew that most of the people in weapon art would look for the wrong. Like, they would literally try to see and find the wrong in whatever you post. And that shows how strong the elitism in weapon art is. And I think it's pretty wild and crazy because we just make games, bro. Like, we don't create limbs for war veterans where if I make this screw on this position wrongly, it will not work. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we make guns for games. It should look cool. It should make the player happy. It should stay in a budget. It should be reasonable.
But that's already
people,
it, right?
That people go way too often, way too crazy with stuff where I'm like, okay, calm down.
Yeah. So how have you seen the games industry in the last year now? Because lots of studios were closing, lots of people losing their jobs.
Do you mean the people or the industry itself?
Like, we can first speak about the industry. I'd like to hear your take on it, especially you coming from outsourcing. You have a pretty good insight into industry because you've seen many companies.
Yeah. I think sounds a bit harsh, but I think it's a natural process in this industry that was about to happen sooner or later. The whole COVID hiring spree, like, because of when people were locked in outside, everyone played video games, even non-gamers started being gamers. Like, their profits went through the roof, and it was obvious that this wasn't maintainable, but investors don't see it this way. Investors just want to see the numbers go up. So it was probably inevitable that we would get a spree of layoffs like this. Sadly, we game devs are on the short stick of the end, on the short end of the stick. When it comes to this, we get just treated like numbers, and sometimes it can be cruel as fuck. And I feel with everyone who was impacted. But I also don't see it as like an omen, like some people do. What I do think is that it's an opportunity for people to finally get the push to create their own thing. Like, I have seen more studios coming up in the last 5 years than before. And I think this year it will go even crazier. And I think maybe this is the time where we will actually see the new Blizzard or EA from tomorrow in the coming years, as in like new companies that embark on their own adventure, because they did got laid off and they are fed up by how big corporate companies treat people and revive the industry.
Do you feel like there's like can you give a guess of what some of the company could be like? So like any company you could feel like they have something very special to be the next EA or Blizzard or Activision?
Well, I think that probably one of my favorite studios that I see all the time that would fall probably into those kind of categories, even though I don't think that even those studios will become like Blizzard or EA, mm-hmm. because they know how shitty those were.
Yeah, yeah.
They try to do different. But I think Embark is on a good
mm-hmm.
track on becoming one of the top players in the next few years. I think Embark is great. There is trying to think of like studios that I know that already released like games recently that did also well, and where I know they know how to produce games. Because here's my problem with a lot of new studios: a lot of them try to be like super triple A and mm-hmm. take 6 years to make their games, but I don't think that if you want to be the next Blizzard you can do this. I think you need to figure out how to make fun games again that don't take 6 years but 2 or 3 years, and lower budgets with bigger winning margins. Like, I think that is the secret to have company
exactly
of the future in this industry.
I think they need
Arrowhead is probably
I think they need to focus more on quality instead of quantity. If you take a look at those latest Call of Duties, or they are so bombarded with content, and
there's so much content. Everyone tries to be the next Fortnite, but it's normal because again, with investors, they chasing the higher and higher numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff needs to go exactly. higher for the investors until they explode. Like, this is inevitable. Like, games like Fortnite, Call of Duty, etc., they can't keep making those numbers for eternity. Like, eventually they will hit rock bottom again. That will be interesting. I mean, even when we look at more stable approaches to this, is probably From Software.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have been around for over 20 years now. They keep producing some of the most memorable, notable games of the year. They are only getting better and better and better. But they also release games every 2 to 3 years. And their games are like some of the most bought games.
There is no battle pass. There is no in-game loot chest bullshit, and they still sell and they make money. And I don't understand why there are people or companies still out there that don't understand that people are willing to pay for good games, and this is crazy.
Well, that's the problem, is because most of them are
not good.
Owned by but also they are owned by shareholders, like public companies.
That's the main problem.
I believe game companies should never go public. It clearly ruins them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to chase for the higher numbers. They have to. There is no maybe, there is no let's change the system. Investors don't care. Investors want their money back. That's all they care. They want more money. Why would they keep investing if they don't get more money out of it? So I think if you want to be a game studio, you can't go public. If you do, you sold your soul and you're going to go the route every other big games company goes. And if that's your goal, if you want to be like stinky billionaire rich, yeah, I guess that's the way you should go. But if you're passionate and you want to make good games that are enjoyable and make the gamers and your workers happy, you should focus on smaller budgets, which doesn't mean indie. Like, you can make a game for 20 to 40 million that competes with big studios still. They just have to be smartly developed, great teams that are not bloated, which is another huge problem of this industry, and with passion and good time management.
Yeah, there's nothing I can add, to be honest. I really want to see the industry focusing more on the gamer, like on the player that sits in front of the console or the computer and just want to enjoy the game and not seeing them as a wallet. And yeah,
maybe in the next coming years I will try something like this, but we will see.
Nice. So yeah, we can also speak about people in the industry. Like as people are, losing their jobs, there has been some, I don't know how to tell it.
Yeah, I think the problem with this is, you have, like, with the hiring spree, they hire more. It's like, you know, when you go hungry to the supermarket or to like online ordering food.
Mm-hmm.
And you buy too much, then you can't swallow.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of what they did, and I feel sad for many of those people that got laid off, because I know of plenty of cases where people got fired that were literally some of the best performers in studios, and it shows that they literally got all, like most of the people got fired based on numbers, not based on valuable for the company or anything. So it's really just like Russian roulette, sadly. And it's very complicated, because I think this industry is very bloated. I think there is so many jobs that are not needed. But I also like to see this industry providing many, many jobs. Mm-hmm. I don't like to see artists that are skillful and that do put in the time and that do want to work in this industry don't have a chance to work in it because companies don't want to grow more. So it's a very complicated thing to keep in balance, I guess. Because, for example, if I made a company, I wouldn't want the company to exceed a certain amount of employees, like, as an example, 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
And if every games company would only go 40 people, just an example.
Yes,
some hundreds of thousands of people.
Mm.
That too, but I mean, hundreds of thousands of people would not have a job now if everyone would go with my approach, for example. So it's a two-sided sword. Like, if you want to get rid of the bloat and make fun games with smaller teams again, it will mean that people will lose their job. But then again, it's also maybe more or less the spirit of way back in the day when teams just formed naturally and wanted to make their own games, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe that is the more healthy thing, that more people form their own companies and try their luck instead of seeing this industry just as a job and trying to hit that job at Riot, Blizzard or whatever. Like, I have been one of those people too that would be like, oh yeah, I want to work on those huge titles, work in those huge companies. But one second, I have to sneeze.
Ole is now hardly trying to
okay.
to sneeze.
What I was saying, so when I wanted to work on all those big companies, I wanted to work on all those big shiny titles,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which I understand to a degree, but maybe we also need like a shift in how we see those things. Maybe people should be, especially in newer generation, maybe people should just more aim for creating those titles, not as in create another league, but as in creating your own game that will become the kind of game that people want to work for. I feel like we have reached this point where too many people want to build other people's dreams,
mm-hmm,
instead of
yeah.
building their own. And that just means that we get less and less IPs that are exciting from new studios. Like, yeah. If I tell you the best new IPs of the last 10 years, I think 8 out of 10 will be a Sony company.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, as an end consumer, that might be okay, even though I think that most Sony IPs are all kind of similar. They're all like action-adventure games with narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I would like to see more companies trying to do their own thing again. And yes, many people will fail. This is not a secret. You try something new, you might fail. It's not a given. It is risky, but it's my approach to life, I guess, anyway. So I can talk easily about this kind of stuff because that's just how I work. But I think it is needed.
Have you
always, but not everyone can be like this. But.
Have you always been this kind of character with a minimum or maximum?
Yes.
Yes. Like in every every life situation, even in school.
Yes.
As you said, you were a dropout, so this was kind of the minimum.
So in in school, exactly. No, in school, I was not interested, so I literally didn't show up, or I wouldn't care learning.
Mm-hmm.
But if I do care about something and I am passionate about something, I'm absolutely maxing it. Like, I play a video game, I'm trying to maxing it if I love it. I try to do 3D, I'm trying to max it. That's another, but it can be a problem too. Like, for example, with photography, I was lucky that from 3D, I could take acceptable shots early on without having them look trash. So my mood, my attitude to it didn't go down. But when it's, for example, I want to learn drawing so badly, but I'm so bad at it.
Same.
That, yeah, but my problem is I need to min-max it. So if I don't see the improvement quick enough, because in 3D I think you can see the improvement quicker. With drawing, it's way more about the hardcore practicing day and day and day. I the problem with drawing is if I want to max it, I need to invest so much time that I don't think I can currently. So I kind of just don't do it because I max other things, basically.
Same. I think this is a good approach to life. Overall, if you want to do something, do it with 100%. And if something is not working out, you just tried it out and it's not working, just drop it. Focus on the things you are really good at.
Yep.
So let's speak about your workflow a bit. How has this changed in the last few years? You're a completely Blender guy, right? Always have been. So
yeah.
How has this changed? Like, is there something you kind of do differently? Obviously, yes. But is there something you do?
I think I just got more efficient, and like I always try to just get more efficient at what I do. But I don't think that it changed massively. Like, I learned how to use it better. I learned how to avoid certain things so I wouldn't go through as many like iterations, all this kind of stuff. But I think in general, it's the way I started my job in this industry and the way I work now is still very similar, except I'm just way more efficient, faster, better. But I don't think that my workflow really changed that much.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to pick up plasticity. That would change my workflow big times,
yeah.
But
yeah.
That's on the list.
So you do everything in Blender, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
Very simple.
All right, then I have one last question. What does Son Goku mean for you? because the creator died, and I saw that you have your profile pic.
Yes,
I started rewatching it last week. So
Papi Toriyama died, man.
Yeah.
what's on Goku means to me? I think. A big problem of our generation is we don't have role models, and the role models we do have are like fucking Andrew Tate, which is awful.
Ooh, yeah.
But you can see that what I'm saying is it's like one of the few role models that our generation has in a negative way, but you can see it shapes people. And But when it comes to real people, we have very few role models, I think, in our generation. Like, the role models that I, as a person, took on as a teenager and young adult were Arnie and Son Goku. And it sounds weird to have an anime character being a role model, I guess, but if you grew up with it, I think it makes a lot of sense. Like, as a little boy, for example, it would teach you to be persistent, to fight for your dream, to become stronger and stronger and stronger, better and better and better at what you do, while massively caring for your friends and family. That's like the biggest traits of a character like Goku, I think, that it shows. And forgiveness, like you see in the whole story how Goku could fight the most vile people, that he would still try to forgive or befriend if they are ready for it. If they are not, they get absolutely fucking destroyed and obliterated. It's how I do it. If I like, we all seen what happened on Twitter with Ben, and everyone told me to stay away from him, and even though I absolutely disagree with all the things he posted, I still think that when people ask for help, you should give them the help. And if they keep on disappointing you, that's not about Ben now, but like in general, about life, then eventually you drop them, because, you know, if the toll on you is too big or you think you can't help someone. But I think that everyone deserves help if they want the help. Yeah, and I think that's things that anime, Dragon Ball, taught me. Yeah, live your dream, chase your dream, get stronger, care about the people around you. Those things.
It's crazy, right? If you think about that, like these animes have so much depth, and they shape us in a way, because we were young back then. It's crazy.
It's like, I think it's just because anime is so stigmatized, but if you take other mediums, other people, like if I told you my like role model would be I don't know, I don't read many books but if I told you like a character from a Shakespeare story or something, people would be like, oh, that is so smart and like so sophisticated and deep of you. But if I say a character that it's an anime character, they would be like, okay, that's interesting, I guess.
that's for children, for kids. It's just very stupid, and they just punch each other, and yeah.
And in a generation that had no role models, you have to look out for things that do shape you and that do influence you. And I think, yeah, stuff like, it's not just Son Goku, it's like the shonen character, main characters that are a bit dumb, because I feel a little bit dumb. But they have a good heart, and they work harder than everyone else to get their dreams, and eventually they get the dreams. So it's that kind of mentality that I just take by heart.
Do you have other influences apart from Dragon Ball? Or is there just, no, that was a stupid question. Do you have other influences, like from other media, like movies or music, or like it all plays together, right?
Well, I don't have like a band or anything, but music.
But you listen
always
to lots
been
of music, right? I imagine.
Yes,
we sent back and forth music back in the days.
Yeah, no, music means everything to me. Like, I think if I didn't went into the games industry, I would probably would have went into sound engineering or something in that way, because music is actually how I got into the games industry, and I can't live without music. Like, I would take my eyesight, I would take my smell, taste, I would take all of that before I take my ears. And like, I in school already, I would not go to school if my headphones weren't charged I lost my cable. I would just not leave the house. I would be like, nope, I'm staying home. And I'm still like this. Like, if my headphones are not charged, I'm not going for the grocery store. I order them home, or I wait until my headphones are charged. Like, I'm not leaving the house without it. Me and my girlfriend would literally go on dates, romantic dates. I would show up with my fucking headphones. I would put them in her bag or give them in the cloakroom. But I don't leave the house without headphones.
Nice.
Except I go with someone out, like in, like from my doorstep to somewhere else, then I leave them at home if I know that someone is like around me, because I obviously can't listen to music anyway. But
yeah. So one last tip. What are you currently listening to? Just what is your your, what is your jam at the moment?
That is an interesting one, because when I was a teenager, I would listen a lot to like Blink, All American
This kind
Rejects,
of face.
All of
the,
yeah,
I remember.
And my girlfriend, she actually is a emo girl, so she listens to like this kind of music a lot. And I really didn't listen to much of that for years, but since we're together, because we have to go like on like we go like on a lot of concerts and see a lot of bands, I listen to a lot of Bring Me the Horizon nowadays.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like probably every time I stream, there is Bring Me the Horizon. Like they're probably my current jam. When I want to work and focus, I listen to Bring Me the Horizon.
Nice.
They have the nice in between of like slow and fast paced, hard and soft.
That's cool. Yeah, I will definitely give it a listen. I heard them before, but I think I don't know any songs from them. All right, Ole, thank you so much for taking the time. It was a great great episode with you. I am keen on having you on for another episode, maybe in the future, to see or to hear what you are cooking.
Yeah, let's have one maybe in like 8 to 12 months, because then I can announce something big probably.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to do so on the podcast. So yeah.
Great.
Sounds good to me.
Thanks, Ole.
Awesome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.